Hello, I'm Dimitris Moraitis. This is number 0584, the Stuff Up program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it's coming to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0584. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Ivan Obolensky, author of Eye of the Moon, as he talks about the art of conversation.
You have a lot of polarization that's going on right now. You have the elections in the United States and COVID. I mean, you name it, there's an awful lot to talk about. A lot of those are fairly serious discussions. And, you know, sometimes you can bring those up and you can go there, but sometimes it's great just to talk. And talking about the weather, strangely enough, is still a very relevant subject. My mom used to say that all the time, and she met everybody, knew everybody, and she always said, you know, if you don't know what to talk about the weather.
Rachel Tamayo, author of the Deadly Sins book series, on her latest title, Carnal Knowledge, which deals with lust.
Carnal Knowledge is about a woman, a young woman, who's going through a rough patch in her life with her husband, and she finds out she's the target of a serial killer. And the serial killer likes to tease his victims for weeks before he kills them. And she realizes what is happening. When you come to serial killer novels, it's unique because you don't usually see it that way. Plus, it has an ending that's just going to completely blow everybody away.
Science writer Andrew Vazekas, the Night Sky Guy, is back to talk about SpaceX and also OSIRIS-REx landing on and scooping up bits of an asteroid.
For 2 years, it was circling that object. And what they realized as soon as they got there, that this asteroid is basically a celestial rubble pile. And so they couldn't land very quickly. So they have to actually spend the next 2 years up until last week to be able to find a safe place to land, which they finally did. And they did a 5-second kiss with the asteroid where they lowered the spacecraft and with a vacuum sucked up a few kilograms of rocks and dust from its surface.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0584, was Dimitros Moraitis, a punk rocker and avid Stuff File program fan who has an overachieving girlfriend with a great new gig. Hold on tight to that one, Zimmy. Thank you very much, Dimitros, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? An unnamed 28-year-old man in search of a voluntary castration, yes, you heard right, found himself drawn to a website offering such services, which led him to travel from Virginia to a cabin in the woods in Oklahoma. There, on October 12th, 53-year-old Bob Lee Allen and 42-year-old Thomas Evans Gates allegedly relieved the victim of his testicles during a 2-hour surgery. Allen told the victim that he has a freezer of body parts and that he was going to consume the parts and laughed and said that he was a cannibal. The day following the operation, Allen took the victim to the hospital because he was bleeding badly, but cautioned him to say he had done it himself. The hospital contacted police and investigators searched the property, finding suspected body parts in a deep freeze. Allen and Gates were charged with multiple felonies and misdemeanors, including conspiracy to commit unlicensed surgery and failure to bury the body parts. I'm just a tad concerned at how easy it is to find a website that offers such services. I'm just curious to know what kind of server that site is on. You know, these are not the kind of sites you normally see in those GoDaddy ads. Also, I wonder if the site offered up any recipes. And how does one even begin to develop a taste for human testicles? These are just a few of the questions I hope I never get answers to. A 17-year-old was taken into custody and to the hospital after he caused a disturbance at a Petro Deli north of Topeka, Kansas on October 17th. The teen, who was naked except for the ranch dressing smeared all over his body, damaged merchandise in the store, then ran out and jumped into a running car, which he crashed into a pillar. Investigators said he was under the influence of a substance. He was released to the custody of his parents. I'm thinking like my dad would write about now. I'm thinking, how do you get all that ranch dressing off the car's upholstery? The Austin, Texas Public Library would normally use about $10,000 to $12,000 worth of toner per year for its printers system-wide, but auditors found that just one branch library bought at least $1.5 million worth of toner over a 12-year period. Video from security cameras allegedly show a single employee, Randall Whitted, bought it, and when he left the building with the cartridges, other employees assumed he was delivering it to other branches. "No," said the auditor, "other branches of the library bought their own." Whitted was taking it home to sell online. A closer look at his city-provided credit card bills found Whitted spent at least $18,000 on personal items, including video games, virtual reality headsets, robotic vacuums, and a drone. Auditors say poor controls enabled the thefts, such as Whitted being empowered to approve his own purchases. Investigators found he had a record of several previous convictions for theft and burglary. So, not only are they lax in their day-to-day overview, but they're also lax in their background checks during their hiring practices. Wow. Stealing all those years from a library. Can I say it now? Yeah. Book 'em. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, while investigating misuse of COVID-19 response funding, Brazilian federal police raided the home of Senator Chico Rodriguez. As a result of what they found, Supreme Court Justice Luis Roberto Barroso suspended Rodriguez, leaving it up to the Senate to decide whether to make the suspension permanent. Wrote Barroso in his decision, considering the manner in which the money was hidden by Senator Chico Rodriguez, quite deeply in his underwear, I will not reproduce these images in the report so as not to cause greater embarrassment. Police were more colorful, reporting the cash was hidden between his butt cheeks. Rodriguez confirmed the raid, but has denied the allegation, saying he has been clean throughout his 30 years in politics. Yeah, but considering where the cash was found, it's just the money that's dirty. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? It was early last year when we last spoke to Ivan Obolensky. He's the author of the gothic mystery Eye of the Moon. It was a great read, especially for a first novel, and Ivan even won an award for the tome as a first-time novelist. Well, I thought it would be a good idea to have him back, because he's a pretty decent conversationalist as well. In fact, what he's here to talk about is the art of the pleasant chat. Ivan joins us via Skype from Uruguay. Hi, Ivan.
Hey there, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Nice to have you back on the program with us once again. I saw a recent blur where you were talking about the art of the pleasant chat. And before I get to that, I have to ask you right off the bat. As I mentioned, I read Eye of the Moon. It's a great read. And I was wondering when any kind of follow-up was coming out.
Well, two things on that. First of all, I'm still mid the sequel. I hope to get that finished by the end of the year. It takes about 3 years for me to write one of these things, so it's that takes a while. But one thing that's really good is that we're coming out with the Spanish edition, actually later this month, probably around the 19th of October. And that is totally fantastic. And that's taken a great deal of work to get done. You know, the translations have to be gone through like in a myriad of different ways, just because so that the whole flavor of the book in English is actually reflected in the Spanish, and the Spanish has to be of a very high caliber, because I think the book is, not only is it a Gothic mystery, but it gets into the into sort of like a literary thriller type of thing. And we definitely, you know, my wife and I really wanted it at a very high technical level in terms of the Spanish. So that's happening, and that's great.
Okay, so back to the idea of being talking about the art of the pleasant chat. What made you think about sharing this idea in the first place?
Well, I think, first of all, almost any conversation, I mean, you have a lot of polarization that's going on right now. You have the elections in the United States, and you've got everything else. And COVID, I mean, you name it, there's an awful lot to talk about. And a lot of those are fairly serious discussions. And, you know, sometimes you can bring those up and you can go there, but sometimes it's just it's great just to talk. And talking about the weather, strangely enough, is still a very relevant subject. I know my mom used to say that all the time, and she, you know, she met everybody, knew everybody, and she always said, you know, if you don't know what to talk about the weather. And I tell you, as a rule of thumb, it tends to work, and it tends to also, strangely enough, diffuse a lot of potentially, how do I say it, contentious, you know, conversations. I mean, and it's great to have one of those contentious ones, but you have to have the time, and I know people don't. So what do you do? That's the thing.
Okay, I'm gonna disagree a little bit with that, and we can chat about that. The fact that
I
spent my life basically earning a living on small talk. That's what I do for a living. But the one thing I've never really talked about is the weather. And it's not because it's such a mundane topic. I guess it's because maybe people just don't know how to talk about the weather. Like, the thing that always annoys me is when you walk into a store and somebody will say, hot enough for you or cold enough for you. And I'm thinking, I don't even understand that comment.
Well, you got to sit there, and that's when it starts, because you say, hot enough for you? And then, of course, the person goes, well, let me tell you. And you are off. You know, cold? And then they're on the cold. And, you know, it just, that's how you do. And you just have to, let the, it's almost like, you know, here is the bottle and the bottle opener, and there's the cap. You know, all you need to do is just twist it off and there you go.
Well, I guess the reason why I've never been fond of that conversation is because it's they want to commiserate, they want you on their side. Like, for instance, from my perspective, it doesn't matter what it's doing outside. I've always maintained, why complain? Because that's what people are usually doing. They're complaining about the weather, and I always say, why complain about the weather? You can't do anything about it.
This is totally true.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really weird. It's like people, they get off on this. I mean, in Uruguay, the weather is a constant source of conversation, just because it is always so weird and so strange and so different. But one of the things is, you want, because a person usually have things to say, and they have opinions, and they want to share those opinions. And even if it's like, I hate the weather, you know, there's somebody there who listens to them and goes, you know, that's absolutely correct. You are totally correct in what you're saying and your point of view. And in that sense, you know, one's acknowledged, because obviously people share opinions because they want to know that they live. How do you know you're alive? Well, the only way to know you're alive is if you talk to someone and they actually answer you.
So are you the kind of person who goes around talking to total strangers?
Sometimes. I must admit, I am not that great at it. I mean, I can and I do. And occasionally I will, just because, you know, I feel if I'm amused or something like that, and I will do that. The best person I've ever met at that is my wife. She talks to anybody that talks, she will talk to them, and she will come away knowing, you know, their parents, how their children are doing, how many, what their birthdays are. I mean, the whole thing. It's amazing, and I like that. I do it just because if something really interests me, the person is interesting, and I will sit there and go, you know, I will open up a conversation with them, usually about something, and that really works for me. I tend to be a little bit more, I guess, not introverted is one. I mean, I tend to live in my own world. I don't necessarily need to go out and interact with everybody in order to feel alive. I mean, I'm a novelist, so I've got lots of things I'm thinking about usually. But, you know, for others that it works. You know, you have to sit there and just, you know, open up. And I think it's a good thing to do. I usually feel very good having done that.
So you say you're a bit of an introvert. In the art of conversation, how do you, as someone who is slightly introverted, go about setting boundaries?
I don't necessarily on that. I've got no problem about somebody talking about me or what they think or something like that, or even asking me questions just about any subject imaginable. That has never been an issue for me. What is the initial start. You know, it's like now we're going to go and say, okay, this is it. I'm going to actually have a conversation. And that's usually starting it off is usually the thing. Once it gets started, it's a breeze.
You come from a background. The last time we spoke to you, we talked about the 1% because you were someone who grew up among the 1%. And you grew up in an era and a time and from a family where social interaction was an important part of success. So how much of what you talk about as far as conversation is concerned is something that was bred into you basically because of the type of lifestyle you lived growing up?
I think it was very much bred into me. I think it's you were trained on it. And remember, there's a difference between a chat and a public relations sort of campaign. And when you start getting into that level of society, you are into public relations. And one of the things what you want to do is, you know, create sort of a pleasantness where you come across as being pleasant, acceptable, and that the person who interacts with you has a good time and a good experience. So when you go into, say, an event type of mode, which, you know, parties, things like that, you are in that type of a mode. You know, the first thing you do is make sure you don't, you know, don't chug a glass of whiskey down right before that. I mean, you've got to sit there and just know that you're on your toes and that this requires your, you know, a lot of your focus on that other person and making sure that the interactions, you know, work and that you have been promoted, your family or whoever you're involved with, you know, gets promoted in a way that's good, whether you become acceptable. And that's very, very important. But those type of conversations, you sort of know going in. And the best way to prepare for that is to, you know, have questions. You know, if you just have questions on hand, and you become an interviewer. In other words, you turn into Peter Anthony Holder.
Well, that's one of the joys of being a broadcaster. I get to find out fascinating information about everyone, and no one knows anything about me.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and that's how you play that game. And you put it right there is exactly what you do.
Well, for those who don't remember when you were on the show the last time, and you know, that's over a year and a half ago, we should mention a little bit about your background. Your grandfather was Serge Obolensky, and he was known as the Prince of New York. He was married to Alice Astor, the daughter of John Jacob Astor, who died on the Titanic. And so there's an element of high society there. Do people, when they find out your background, your history, do they conversationally treat you different? You know, I'm thinking of the Cole Porter song, "What a Swell Party This Is."
Yeah, I know. Well, they usually don't know, and I don't usually I don't announce that fact very much. As a matter of fact, very few people actually know that. But, you know, some people who do the digging actually do. Just as an interesting thing, Vincent Astor, who was Alice's brother, when John Jacob Astor died, he was like 28 years old, and he took over the entire fortune, which was probably the largest in the world at that time, I think. But he was a very reclusive man. His idea of a good time was sitting down in front of the fire at home. I mean, he hated going out. And that was something which he solved that through his marriages. He had a couple of them, but it was my Aunt Brooke who finally really sort of took it on it herself to be that spokesperson for him. And that's how that worked. So you will often find that just because, you know, the person is famous, that they have substitutes or other ways of getting around it. And not all of them are extremely gregarious and as it should be.
Well, it's always a pleasure having an opportunity to talk to you, Ivan. Your book, which, again, I heartily recommend. I read it last year when it came out, and I got to admit, I was more than surprised by how much I enjoyed it. It was really a good read. Eye of the Moon. You say it's coming out in Spanish soon, and you're still working on a sequel to it. I hope that comes out soon. And I hope when it does, you'll come back on the program and talk with us.
I will definitely do that, Peter. And thank you so much for having me on the show, and also for, you know, your reading it and really liking it. I, as an author, that's the best.
Thanks for being on the program, Ivan.
Thank you, Peter.
Ivan Obolensky, author of Eye of the Moon. You can go to my website at thestuffile.com, turn to the page for this show, which is show number 0584, and you'll find links to Ivan's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. This is The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. This broadcast is coming to you from upstairs. Get out of the house.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Carnal Knowledge. Plus, Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, is on to talk about space. You know, the final frontier. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way and lots more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including all of your devices such as Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, just to name a few. Also on several over-the-air radio stations. Remember those? Yes. WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. WLSL, LPFM in Dade City, Florida. CKUW, 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. CKLU, 96.7 FM in Sudbury. And CKHR, Hay River in the Northwest Territories. Among a few. Thanks to all for joining in. Don't touch that dial. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? A Walmart store in Oklahoma was evacuated and temporarily closed after a skunk wandered into the men's shoe department. Officials at the store in Edmond had the business evacuated and temporarily closed while waiting for a wildlife wrangler to arrive and capture the animal. Trevor Bounds with Redbeard's Wildlife Solutions arrived on the scene to remedy the potentially smelly situation. "Nobody wants to come shop at Skunk Spray Central," Bounds said. "It's more fairly common than you think. I tell everybody, you got to look at the foundations. Any kind of entry they can find to gain entry, they're going to." Bounds said he humanely trapped the skunk, and it was to be examined by veterinarians at WildCare Oklahoma before being returned to the wild. The Walmart store was reopened. You know, this is yet another story that just has shoddy incomplete journalism. No reporter bothered to find out whether the skunk was looking for a lace-up or a loafer. They didn't even bother to check what size the skunk was looking for. Sad work. Just sad work. A severed finger pointed deputies to a suspect during an investigation into a recent theft in Tennessee. The Anderson County Sheriff's Office responded to a report of a stolen log splitter at a property where the severed finger was found along with a cell phone, tools, and other items. Detectives found that Hugh Sieber had been dropped off at Methodist Medical Center with a missing finger. The 50-year-old was then transported to the University of Tennessee Medical Center in Knoxville for treatment. Anderson County Detective Sean Flynn met him there, taking the severed finger with him. Sieber was later charged with felony theft of property. I'm sure the cops got a head start on getting his prints. I wonder if they made him count to 10 before arresting him. As a fun way to get customers involved with a new IKEA store in Spain, the Swedish retailer asked the public to name the street it's on. Anyone who's been frustrated trying to assemble items bought from the store will appreciate the winning entry. Translating the name into English, the name of the road is I'm Missing a Screw Street, and IKEA's okay with that. Said a spokesperson, "We want to make our arrival here more special, always with a touch of humor, which defines our style." You know, I've never had a problem with missing screws whenever I bought something at IKEA. My major complaint with the store is that once you're in, you can never find your way out. The design of those mazes they call a store is almost criminal. I'm sure the last time I was there, I saw a skeleton. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Alicia Beverly of Detroit was sleeping in the back seat of a red-eye flight home from Las Vegas on October the 12th when she felt something warm on her side and woke up to realize a man standing in the aisle who was urinating on her. "I screamed and that woke everybody else up," she said. "I looked and there was a puddle of pee in the seats." An off-duty police officer on the flight restrained the unidentified man, described as a well-known pastor from North Carolina, and he was taken into custody upon landing but has not been charged. Beverly had to sit in her wet clothes for the duration of the trip and is suffering anxiety following the incident. "Since then, I have only gotten 4 hours sleep," she said. I'm currently thinking of a certain hotel room in Moscow, but we'll just leave that alone for now. I'm also just wondering what that pastor's next sermon will be like, and if he brings up the parable of turning water into wine. Also, I bet Alicia is now having nightmares about being baptized. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Rachel Tamayo is an award-winning author and a former 911 dispatcher. She is the mind behind the book series Deadly Sins, with the second one now out called Carnal Knowledge. Rachel joins us via Skype from Houston, Texas. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Thanks very much for being on the program with us. As I mentioned, this is a series. Was it always intended when you first started writing that it was going to be a series of, I guess, 7 books?
Yes. When the idea hit me, it hit me immediately to do a book for each one of the 7 deadly sins. Now, I had no idea, and I still don't have any idea as far as what the next sins will bring, but I knew that it would be something that you don't see it a lot, you know?
So besides the connection of the 7 deadly sins, is there another theme running through the books? Is there, are there the same central characters running through the books, or are they all individual novels?
They're all individual novels. They all begin and end, and none of them have the same characters. So far, they've all been psychological thrillers. They've all had a lot of twists and turns in them. It seems like they get more twisty and turny as the books progress. so far that seems to be happening.
So, as a writer, when you say that, do you plot out everything that you want to do in a book as you begin, or do you figure things out as you go along during the writing process?
I figure it out as I go. I tend to get stuck in places because I do that, and I'll just let it linger basically for days or weeks, however long it takes until I get my idea for the next bit, and then I'll take off from there. So yeah, I'm not actually one that writes every day either because of the way I write.
On your website, it says, "Where dark twists thrill and things are not as they seem." Are you the kind of person who is someone who enjoys the macabre? And I ask that as someone who is a former 911 dispatcher.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. I seem to gravitate towards it. Now, enjoying it, I don't know if that's the right word. I do like to read thrillers myself, and I enjoy surprising the readers. I love doing that with all the twisties and turnies and the surprise endings and everything. But yeah, I spent a long time as a 911 dispatcher, so the darkness does play into it, most definitely.
I'm currently watching an ABC series called Emergency Call. I don't know if you're familiar with that show. It actually deals with 911 dispatchers, and it's been on for about a few weeks now. And it's rather chilling. And I say that from the point of view of the dispatcher. I'm just wondering, what's it like? I know you don't do that job anymore, but what was it like just going home every night, decompressing from the trials and tribulations of doing that job?
Well, it definitely takes a certain breed of person, and because it's not like you can't go home and say, oh my God, guess what happened today, is because a lot of the time people don't want to hear that, you know. You can't necessarily, just depends on your environment, you can't necessarily go home and talk about your day. But a lot of the time it is just mundane, everyday, you know. Not every day is like that, depending on where you are. Now, if you're you're working in a big city like Houston, yes, every day is like that. But I worked for suburbs, smaller cities. So every day wasn't like that. We had definitely had our boring days. And then we had days that were nothing like boring. So it's just what comes with a job.
So tell us about your latest novel, which again is called Carnal Knowledge. What is the story about?
Well, Carnal Knowledge is about this lust. But I always say that it's not the kind of lust that immediately comes to mind when you think of lust. It's lust being defined as an unsatisfiable hunger, something that you cannot get enough of, that does not necessarily have to be sexual. It can be in pretty much anything. So Carnal Knowledge is about a woman, a young woman, who's going through a rough patch in her life with her husband, and she finds out she's the target of a serial killer. And the serial killer likes to tease his victims for weeks before he kills them. And she realizes what is happening. She's actually the police. It just gets into the whole thing. And I feel that it's, when you come to serial killer novels, it's unique, because you don't usually see it that way. Plus, it has an ending that's just going to completely blow everybody away.
Well, that's good to hear.
Nobody's going to see the ending coming. Okay. Nobody.
You know, when you often hear about a story where, let's be honest, a woman is being taunted and chased, and you often hear that it's a male who's writing this story, not a female. So
right.
I ask that question because I'm just wondering if you feel, besides the surprise ending, which I'm not obviously going to give away, or you're going to give away, besides the ending, how do you feel this particular story is written or told differently than other stories that have a so-called damsel in distress who may be taunted by her, or by someone who wants to do her harm?
Well, I guess I would say that she is her own hero. In a lot of books, you're written by males. The woman has a tendency to lean on a certain man, or, you know, the man comes in and saves the day at some point or another. She's pretty much on her own, and she's going through a rough patch, and her ex-husband, or her husband, strange husband, comes in, and he tries to be the hero, but she doesn't want anything to do with him. And she has to decide whether she's going to fight or not. she has to make that decision. It's not nobody. There's nobody to save her. So she has to stand on her own. So I think that makes it different.
You have decided to donate some of your royalties to help a certain cause. Can you tell us about that and why you decided to do this?
Yeah, actually, that kind of happened by accident because I got on TikTok as a whim, and my account blew up because I was telling, 911 stories, and the public is so uneducated when it comes to emergency services and 911. Everybody had all these questions for me. And one of my videos has like almost 2 million views. And on that video, the comments, people in the comments started getting into arguments about postpartum depression. And I realized what I could do. So I decided then to give 52% of the royalties, like 2/4, to help, because the postpartum depression needs more research, needs more attention, and women need to know that it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to stand up and say, don't be ashamed, I need help. They need to not be ashamed of that.
And we had a little bit of phasing on our line here when you said that. So you said 50% of the royalties for a particular time period you're going to give to assist those in postpartum depression?
Yes, 50% of the royalties for the next 2 royalty cycles, which would be is quarterly for me. So when I get those checks, I will give half of that to the charity for the next 2, for the next 6 months, basically.
The book, Carnal Knowledge, again, second in the series of Deadly Sin books. The first one was Break My Bones, was that correct?
Yes.
And your third one, I believe, is coming out next year. And that would be The Sin of Greed.
Yes. Yes, that is correct. That one is in editing. So I don't have a date for that one yet. But yes, that one is going to be Greed.
Greed. It's an interesting concept you have in coming up with the idea of writing the deadly sins. I would suspect that once you finish writing these 7 books that you're not going to stop writing. Do you have any idea what you'll do after that?
No. No, I've thought about that. I'm like, well, I still have 4 books to go. And, you know, I've had a lot of people request a sequel to Crazy Love, which is one of my first thrillers. A lot of people want a sequel to that book. There's that option. There's also a character in that book I could actually do a spinoff for. I've got some options. I don't know what I'll do, because by the time I finish the series, some new idea might hit me. And I may take off running with something else. But those are options I have.
Well, in the meantime, the current book, which is now out, is called Carnal Knowledge. It's the second book in the Deadly Sins series. Rachel, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Rachel Tamayo, author of Carnal Knowledge, part of her Deadly Sins series. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0584, and you'll find the link to Rachel's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with 2 men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with 2 men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
Latitude 47 degrees 14 minutes north. Longitude 84 degrees 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents Andrew Fazekas, the Night Sky Guy. It's radio that's out of this world.
Andrew Fazekas is a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. Andrew, we have a couple of things to chat. One of them is the next mission for SpaceX, which is happening next month. But before we get to that, I have another bone to pick with you. About three weeks ago, I complained when you didn't warn us about asteroids heading our way. Well, this time around, you didn't warn us about Mars. What do you have to say for yourself?
It's not going to hit us. We're in no danger. I got to tell you, we just get a beautiful ring side seat. And this show is still going on as we speak for the next month. You might have already noticed, if you look towards the east, soon after darkness falls, there's this brilliant orange golden star. It'll knock your eyes out. It's the brightest star-like object in the east that rises every evening. And that is actually the planet Mars. It's not even a star. It's our neighboring world. And right now, it's undergone what we call opposition. Now, officially, that happened in mid-November. Mid-October, on October 13th, was the official date of opposition of Mars. And what that basically means is that Mars is opposite in the sky to where the sun is. So you can have this, you can imagine there's this beautiful lineup of the sun, the Earth, and Mars. And at that point, for sky watchers like you and me here, our little Earthlings, we get to see Mars at its brightest and biggest through telescopes as well. So Mars came as close as 61 million kilometers from Earth. And I know that sounds like a lot, but astronomically, that's literally right next door. And so that close proximity to our planet makes Mars appear so bright in our skies, even to the naked eye.
Now, as I mentioned, there is that SpaceX flight. We'll get to that in a bit. But there's some other big news that's taking place. We'll get to this first. And that is the world's most expensive trash collector just apparently joined up with an asteroid to gather some dirt, literally, sort of like an astronomical gossip columnist. OSIRIS-REx, tell us about this.
That's right. So this is this long-awaited mission, a robotic space mission from NASA that was launched back in 2016 on a mission to visit an asteroid called Bennu. And this is an asteroid that's about the size of the Empire State Building. That's how wide it is. And it is this spacecraft finally had reached its destination 2 years ago, in 2018, 2 years after it was launched. And then it went into orbit around it. So basically orbiting it, circling this giant asteroid, looking for a potential site to land quickly and grab some samples off the surface. And for 2 years, it was circling that object. And what they realized as soon as they got there, that this object, this asteroid, is basically a celestial rubble pile, just filled with boulders and rocks, jagged rocks all over the surface. And so they couldn't land very quickly. So they had to actually spend the next 2 years up until this past week to be able to find a safe place to land, which they finally did. And they did a 5-second basically a kiss with the asteroid, where they lowered the spacecraft and with a vacuum sucked up a few kilograms of rocks and dust from its surface.
It's almost like the world's most expensive mosquito.
Pretty much. But what's exciting to our astronomers, why all the buzz surrounding the OSIRIS-REx mission, is that this sample of an asteroid really represents a look back in the most ancient times of our solar system, the birth of when the birth of all the planets in the solar system, including the Earth. So it's kind of like a time capsule, this asteroid is, holding some of the mysteries of what it was like in the solar system when all the planets were just forming. And we're talking about 4.5 billion years ago. So we'll have to be a bit patient, though, because these samples won't be returning back to Earth for another 3 years. So until 2023, we'll wait for that. But there's going to be generations of scientists being able to study these rock samples from this asteroid.
And there is a Canadian component in all of this, isn't there?
Well, there is. There is the special radar instrument on board that allows us to see and find the safe spots to land. So really, Canada has played a pivotal role in this mission as well.
Now, back on October 14th, there was a launch in Kazakhstan of one of the Russian rockets, and it was the last time that an American gets to use a Soviet craft, or I shouldn't say Soviet craft anymore, Russian craft as a space Uber to the tune of $90 million. Kate Rubins is the last person, the last American to go up to hitch a ride from the Russians. And she's up there now on the International Space Station. She's going to be there for a couple of months. And the reason I bring that up is because there is a SpaceX launch next month in November. It was moved from October to November. That's now going to be the new way that Americans get to space, either by SpaceX or, I guess, the other competitor, if that ever gets up off the ground.
That's right. That's the Boeing Starliner, too. That's still under development. They've had their own problems there at Boeing with their version of the Dragon crew. That's their, it's called Starliner. But, you know, hopefully they'll be joining in next year, too. But they'll have to go undergo some tests. But what all the buzz here now is, of course, is with the first, this will be the first crew mission, official crew mission. It's not a test. It's part of the regular, like you said, Uber service that SpaceX will be offering. And so this is SpaceX is what they're calling the Crew One mission. And this mission will bring three NASA astronauts and an astronaut from Japan's JAXA space agency all to the International Space Station. So it'll be a crew of four that will be on board this mission. It was originally slated for the 31st of October. And what's interesting is that once they get there, probably by mid-November, we're talking about a six-month mission. This is going to be a really amazing mission because we'll have a full crew complement aboard the International Space Station. And this crew, it's called Crew One, that's the mission, what it's called, is going to be among six planned missions that SpaceX has on tap to send to the International Space Station. This is all, of course, under contract with NASA that they got back about 5-6 years ago under what they call the commercial crew program, where their NASA is coupling with the private sector, private companies to basically shuttle astronauts to and from the International Space Station. And this is coming, let's not forget, this is coming on the heels of the Dragon flight Demo 2 test mission back in May. Where you had Doug Hurley and Bob Behnken going to the ISS for a two-month visit, and that went off amazingly. So they returned back on August 2nd. So this is going to be quite a follow-up for it, and everyone is really excited for them to finally start get going after so many years of wait after the space shuttle fleet was retired.
You mentioned it's a full complement on the International Space Station. What exactly constitutes a full complement, and is anybody coming back on that ship when it returns?
Well, yeah, I mean, when we're talking about a full complement, we're talking about 6 to 7 crew members on board the International Space Station. So, there are regular trips that are to and from the International Space Station, but sometimes if there's delays in some of these shuttling systems, which has been, you know, relying on the Russian Soyuz spacecrafts for a number of years since the shuttle retirement. There have been times where there have been only three astronauts on board, but now with Dragon crew, the capabilities that they can bring as many as four astronauts in one time. So this will bring up the crew capability back to as much as seven on board the International Space Station. And this is really important to be able to conduct all the tests that they want, not just maintaining this the space station, but also conducting all the scientific tests, and particularly with long-term human spaceflight. That's a big part of what this mission is about.
Do we know why the launch was moved from the last day of October into the mid-November period?
Yeah, I mean, what SpaceX is saying is that there were some issues regarding some of the booster rocket, the first stage rocket engines on their Falcon 9. This is their Falcon 9 rocket. So according to what they're saying is they had some issues related to those engines and how they perform. They had to fix that. So seems like, you know, right now they're looking at, you know, early to mid-November for that rescheduling.
Meanwhile, and I'll let you go on this fine note, the fact that Kate Rubin is up there on the space station right now. She went up, as I mentioned, on the 14th of October. Since she's up there, that means she's going to be voting in the federal election in the United States from the International Space Station. If President Trump didn't like absentee ballots before, this one's got to make his head spin.
Can you imagine? Yeah, that's that. I don't know how he's going to take to that one. That's for sure.
Yeah. That might be the least of his problems on Election Day. Andrew, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us once again.
Great to be here, and clear skies.
Andrew Fizakis, the night sky guy, and the author of National Geographic's Backyard Guide to the Night Sky. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Check out the show number for this program, which is 0584. And you'll find links to his site and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Police in Gulfport, Florida say a 23-year-old man is facing a manslaughter charge after he shot and killed his twin brother. According to police, Thomas Parkinson Freeman and his twin, Matthias, were sitting in a vehicle in front of their home with a friend just after 7 p.m. talking and joking. Police say at one point, Matthias pulled out a concealed handgun and pointed it at his brother, Thomas, who in turn pulled his own gun and pointed it back at him. Thomas pulled the trigger and Matthias was hit in the face. Thomas was wearing a gun belt left over from a former job as a security officer with a personal handgun at the time. According to police, he was wearing it to show it off to others. Detectives say Thomas was not acting in self-defense. They say he told them that he was not in fear at the time and didn't believe his brother would shoot him, but said that he reacted automatically based on training and didn't know why he did so. Oh, I can think of a reason why. You know how when some people say that it seems that twins often share a brain? Well, it must be a situation of diminishing returns when both of them are half-wits. Yeah. You know, I could have made that the idiot of the day, but it, quite frankly, it's way too tragic for that. I guess it could have been a Darwin file story, but no. But, boys and girls, this is the moment you've now been waiting for. This is indeed time for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff Up presents the Idiot of the Day.
A woman caught with $1.9 million in narcotics claimed she was returning from a vacation in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. 54-year-old Kathleen Ann Stanley, a U.S. citizen from Georgia, was arrested and charged with import, attempt to import, and conspiracy to import a controlled substance. The 2011 Chevrolet Traverse Stanley was driving arrived at the Juarez-Lincoln International Bridge. An X-ray of the Chevrolet yielded several anomalies in the cargo area. CBC officers then discovered an aftermarket compartment with multiple packages that tested positive for 94.35 pounds of methamphetamine. Homeland Security Investigations special agents responded to investigate further. Stanley said she left on October the 2nd to Nuevo Laredo for a vacation. She stated that while at her hotel, she provided her vehicle keys to someone who returned the keys 4 days later. Stanley then drove to the bridge, where she was eventually arrested. Stanley stated she knew the vehicle contained something illegal but was unsure what. She knew this because she was being paid a few thousand dollars and was going to be able to keep the vehicle. Stanley was aware that transporting narcotics into the United States was illegal and had knowledge that the vehicle she was operating contained some kind of contraband, states the affidavit. CBP also seized 3.30 pounds of heroin from the Chevrolet. The combined narcotics had an estimated street value of $1,962,137. Now, why, oh why, would you act like you were on a game show and was going to be able to go back home with lovely cash and prizes, or at the very least, lovely parting gifts, because you gave your vehicle over to strangers for a couple of days so they could make modifications? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0584. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0584. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, Verdant Square Radio, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. We leave you with this deep environmental thought. If we don't do something about global warming soon, eventually there won't be any ice floes left to put our elders on.